We inform.
Religious freedom is about people of faith being able to live out their faith, live out their convictions, no matter where they are.
We equip.
Sacred honor is the courage to speak truth, to live out your free speech.
We also rejoice in our sufferings because we know that suffering produces perseverance, perseverance, character, and character, hope.
This is At the Core on American Family Radio.
Welcome to The Core. This is our live edition of the program. Glad to have you with us. Walker Wildman here on the American Family Radio Network. We're broadcasting in over 30 states through our 170-plus radio signals around the country. And, of course, we're online on the web, live streaming on the AFR app and at AFR.net. If you want to watch the video, stream.afa.net, stream.afa.net. We're also on the Facebook, on Meta, on Zuckerberg's Facebook, with At the Core's Facebook page there. So you can go there and check it out as well. Well, Psalm 132 is where we are this week, Psalm 132, and verse 13, "For the Lord has chosen Zion, he has desired it for his habitation. For the Lord has chosen Zion, he has desired it for his habitation." That's Psalm 132, verse 13. Continuing this theme in the last several chapters of the book of Psalm, of the Lord's emphasis on the land, the nation, the people of Israel. Well, moving into our topic for today. We've got a guest coming up in the second. We're going to hopefully take your calls in the last segment. But right now, I want to talk about a few things election-related. Can I just vent for a minute? I mean, I do this every so often on the show. I just got to kind of let some air out of my tire. I am just tired of the national polls. And here's what I mean by that. So clearly, we have this thing called an electoral college. I know people don't like it, and Kamala Harris and Tim Walz, they want to ditch the electoral college. They're actually talking about it now on the campaign trail as they're about to use the electoral college to try to get elected. But with the understanding of the electoral college, why on earth would any polling firm run a national poll? I mean, this is just, it's just bizarre. This isn't like a biblical issue. It's a rather tertiary issue and pretty minor, but boy, is it getting under my skin. Why on earth would a polling firm pay a company to run a national poll on the presidential election race? It just makes zero sense. And here's why I say that. Right now, Drudge Report, they've gone uber left. I mean uber left. Drudge Report used to be the leading conservative news aggregate in the country with hundreds of millions of hits every month. But now I find myself still going back there, maybe because I wish it was what it once was. But Drudge's leading headline for today is that Kamala Harris is up 5 points. And you're like, wow, Kamala Harris is up 5 points? I want to read more. And then you go to it. Well, it's a national poll. Well, it's no surprise that Kamala Harris is up 5 points nationally when states like California are deep blue and have tens of millions of residents and voters. Same thing with New York. And just to do a little comparison here, Joe Biden was up 9 points. According to this exact same poll, at the same time in 2020, Joe Biden was up 9 points nationally. But guess how much he won the Electoral College by? A little bitty fraction. And I'm not talking about the Electoral College votes. I'm talking about the difference in Georgia, Pennsylvania, Arizona, Michigan. He won by like 0.1 0.2, 0.3% in those states. He did not win by 9%. And so I just don't understand it. The headlines, and of course the left uses this for a momentum builder. Oh, Kamala Harris up 5 points. Kamala Harris up 3 points. Kamala Harris up 9 points. Nationally, folks, that literally does not matter at all. Literally, it doesn't matter at all. Now, if you run a poll in a battleground state and you say Kamala Harris is up five, that's a big deal. That's a big deal. But the Democrats have been winning the popular vote for a long time. I don't know the history fully. I can definitely tell you Clinton, both Obama, Clinton, and Biden all won the popular vote handily, hands down, but by like 30 million votes, 20 to 30 million votes. Not that many. I'm sorry, 10 million votes, roughly, thereabouts. Joe Biden got 81 million votes, supposedly. Joe Biden got 81 million votes. And President Trump got, I think, 73. So 8 million, 7, 8 million, depending on which election we're talking about. So, but my point is, that's a pretty big gap there nationally. But at the state level, it was very slim, very slim. When it comes to the different, the level of difference between Biden and Trump. So my message to the campaigns and to the voters is just to completely ignore national polls and focus on state polls. That's what matters. How is Trump doing? How is Harris doing in Pennsylvania, Georgia, Michigan, Minnesota, Wisconsin, North Carolina, Arizona, Nevada? How are they doing in those states? That's what this is going to boil down to. And this is why Democrats want to ditch the Electoral College, is because if they ditch the Electoral College, folks, there is no more two-party system. There will be no more two-party system. There will be a one-party system, and it'll be the Democrats because they win the popular vote nearly every time. So that's just my venting session for today. But J.D. Vance has just been completely handling the media. I mean, he goes on all these hostile shows with CNN, MSNBC, New York Times, and he just completely runs the court, all right? Completely runs the show. And he did the same thing when he was sitting down in a long-form interview with a New York Times reporter. And they sat down and did this podcast together with the New York Times. And the topic of illegal immigration and jobs came up. And I want you to listen to this, because the left and the Democrats and those in favor of illegal immigration, they always go to, well, we need the jobs and we need the labor and we need the population and we need the workforce, blah, 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 which is actually kind of dehumanizing, the fact that we let people into our country just because we need their labor. That's not very genuine to me. But instead of letting them in our country because we appreciate our country and we value them and we think they're going to be a contributor to society and for the betterment of our country. But the Democrats make this all about basically labor, which is a kind of a dehumanizing way of looking at it. But listen to this exchange between J.D. Vance and this New York Times reporter on this false premise that we have to have illegal immigrants to do American jobs.
The reason that there is a housing crisis is that not enough houses have been built.
And that we have 25 million people who shouldn't be here.
Well, I mean, this is the thing. I think it's
both.
I know you do. I don't think that many people who look into this agree with you, but about a third of the construction workforce in this country is Hispanic. Of those, a large proportion are undocumented. So how do you propose to build all the housing necessary that we need in this country by removing all the people who are working in construction?
Well, I think it's a fair question, because we know that back in the 1960s, when we had very low levels of illegal immigration, Americans didn't buy houses, didn't build houses. but of course they did. And I'm being sarcastic, of course, in service of a point, Lulu, the assumption that because a large number of home builders now are using undocumented labor, that's the only way to build homes. I think, again,
the country is much bigger. The need is much bigger. I mean, I'm not arguing in favor of illegal immigration. I'm asking how you would deal with the knock-on effect of your proposal to remove millions of people who work in a critical part of the economy.
Well, I think that what you would do is you would take, let's say, for example, the 7 million prime age men who have dropped out of the labor force, and you have a smaller number of women, but still millions of women prime age who have dropped out of the labor force. You absolutely could reengage folks into the American labor market. This is, I think,
to work in construction.
Of course, you could.
Oh my God!
I mean, the unemployment rate is 4.1%. Most people who
unemployment rate, Lulu, this is important.
But most people who don't work can't work in the regular economy. They're in the military. They're parents. They're sick. They're old. They might not want to work in construction.
The unemployment rate is not does not count labor force participation dropouts. And again, this is one of the really deranged things that I think illegal immigration does to our society, is it gets us in a mindset of saying we can only build houses with illegal immigrants when we have 7 million, just men, not even women, just men who have completely dropped out of the labor force. People say, well, Americans won't do those jobs. Americans won't do those jobs for below the table wages. They won't do those jobs for non-living wages. But people will do those jobs. They will just do those jobs at certain wages. And think about this from the perspective of an American company, okay? I want them to go searching in their own country for their own citizens. Sometimes people who may be struggling with addiction or trauma, get them reengaged in American society. We cannot have an entire American business community that is giving up on American workers and then importing millions of illegal laborers. That is what we have thanks to Kamala Harris's border policies. I think it's one of the biggest drivers of inequality. It's one of the biggest reasons why we have millions of people who have dropped out of the labor force. Why try to reengage an American citizen in a good job if you can just import somebody from Central America who's going to work under the table for poverty wages? It is a disgrace, and it has led to the evisceration of the American middle class.
Amen to that. You notice she just got schooled, by the way. But you notice this is a very arrogant elitist approach that the left takes on this. Do you notice that she said she kind of scoffed at the idea that Americans building houses? So why can't Americans build houses? Why can't Americans do manual labor? Why do we have to import the Mexicans?
Well, they were laid off. You right. had plenty of American workers building.
You did. They were replaced.
They built those for decades.
Yes.
And they were undercut by wages, and that's why the American laborer fell by the wayside.
1,000%. So we got to get out of this elitist, egalitarian mindset that Americans can't do manual labor. I mean, this is like, folks, this is denigrating. And it's also, you talk about lowering the bar. I mean, where are we? I mean, you talk about the epitome of lazy, the epitome of entitlement is to teach Americans that you shouldn't have to build houses. What? So let's sit on the couch? No, that this denigrating of blue-collar jobs, folks, is wicked. That's what it is. This is wicked and unbiblical. This denigrating of blue-collar manual labor jobs is demoralizing and it's unbiblical. All right? There's nothing wrong with wanting an education. There's nothing wrong with wanting to be a doctor or a lawyer and work with your brain and not your hands. That's completely fine. There's always been jobs throughout creation and history that are, some are more kind of brain-oriented, some are more thought-oriented. Some people work with their heads. Other people work with their hands. That's completely fine. We need both. But this over-criticizing manual labor and telling future generations that you should not want to build houses. You should not want to be in construction. You should not want to be in a warehouse. You should not want to be doing fill in the blank, whatever is manual labor, blue collar, etc. You're cutting off half of the economy for the American worker. And it's not rooted in anything noble, virtuous, or moral. That's a hard reality. And so let's get out of this toxic way of thinking that Americans can't do jobs with their hands. We can't get our hands dirty because we're Americans. This is ridiculous. And yes, illegals are replacing our jobs. It's happening every single day. And I'm thankful J.D. Vance spoke truth there. We'll be back in a few.
At the Core podcasts are available at AFR.net. Now, back to At the Core on American Family Radio.
Welcome back to The Core here on American Family Radio. It's Walker Wildman here with you on today's program. That's a Revelation song by Phillips, Craig, and Dean. Well, in the last segment, I just wrapped it up talking about manual labor, the American economy, and how illegal immigrants are taking American jobs. And, you know, just to wrap this up, the if you tell a generation that they don't need to work with their hands, that they don't need to work in the trades, they don't need to work in the skilled professions, that they just need to go to school for 8 years and get in a bunch of debt to not use their degree, then you turn around 30 years later and you're having trouble getting plumbers and electricians and welders in the workforce. Well, what do you think is going to happen? I mean, you've been telling people for the last few decades that they don't need to go into these blue-collar jobs, that they all need to be doctors and lawyers, and then now all of a sudden we have a shortage of skilled labor. Well, what do you expect? So that's a major point, and I'm just glad J.D. Vance is pointing that out. I mean, he is really good on this issue of rebuilding the American workforce, on reshoring American manufacturing, and really reviving the heartland of America. That's what his book, Hillbilly Elegy, was centrally about. Let's jump to our next guest to continue, really, our election-themed shows that seem to be more frequent than not. Jamie Dangers is with us now. She's Director of Federal Affairs over at the Susan B. Anthony Pro-Life America Group, and she's with us now, one of the largest pro-family organizations in the country. Jamie, welcome to the program.
Thanks so much for having me.
Well, Jamie, we saw during the DNC, this was rather shocking, even to those of us who keep up with politics. We saw the DNC set up a Planned Parenthood. They gave permission, obviously, for Planned Parenthood to set up a bus outside of the DNC that was providing abortions, both surgical and mifepristone, the abortion pill. This was shocking, even for those of us who keep up with, you know, the whole political arena and aren't surprised by much. This was a rather kind of graphic, gruesome, and bold move by the Democrats.
It was. It was a really gruesome picture of what they stand for. Not only was there an abortion van right there, and we know that there were at least 8 babies who lost their lives at that van during the Democratic National Convention, But think of the message that was sending. Think of what the party was celebrating in allowing that, and in the debate about the platform where they now mention abortion more times than ever before, where they are no longer at all the party of safe, legal, and rare, where there was some sort of stigma attached to abortion still. Now they are the Shout Your Abortion party. They celebrate it as a good thing, and they condemn anything that gets in the way of a woman's accessing abortion.
You know, Jamie, this seems to be their holy grail, so to speak. I mean, this, to your point about the number of times that they mention abortion in their party platform documents, and the fact that I mean, they hardly do an interview or a speech without mentioning abortion. And we've seen the rate at which they're trying to expand abortion at the state level through these ballot amendments, which I do want to get your thoughts on. But would you say this is their issue? I mean, I don't really know of any other issue that they have more passion for. I'm talking about the Democrats and abortion.
Well, I think it's interesting that even the liberal media says that abortion is the topic on which Kamala Harris and Tim Walz both speak the most eloquently. I think that says a lot. They can't really defend their record on a lot of issues that Americans care about. And so they're trying to use lies and fear-mongering tactics to take the abortion issue, to confuse Americans into thinking that the pro-life side is actually the dangerous one, and that the pro-abortion side is the one that will care for women, when in fact that is the exact opposite.
Once again, we're talking to Jamie Dangers. She's Director of Federal Affairs over the Susan B. Anthony List. let me ask you this, Jamie. President Trump, unfortunately, has fallen on the wrong side of the abortion issue on a couple of occasions, and that's really disappointing. He did do a very good job appointing Supreme Court justices and other federal court judges that are very much pro-life and constitutional. So I want to commend him for that. And so, you know, we could talk about that, and that's recognizable. That's not nobody's trying to hide that President Trump has gotten wrong on this issue, has been wrong a few times on this issue of life and when life begins and when it should be protected. But on the other hand, the Democrats— President Trump, you can at least nail him down on what his limits are. He's done that in multiple interviews. But every single time any of the Democrats, whether it's Kamala Harris, Tim Walz, Joe Biden, any of them, even some of these Democrat governors, anytime they're asked about what their limits are, would you limit abortion under any circumstance? If so, what circumstance or what, you know, age, what trimester, et cetera? All of them have virtually non-answered. That they have completely avoided this answer. So does this really leave us with the conclusion that they're fully in favor of abortion all the way through pregnancy?
They absolutely are. They scoff at Trump and Vance when they point out their abortion extremism. But when you look at the actual voting record and the rhetoric of Kamala Harris and Tim Walz when they were in Congress, when Harris was the Attorney General of California, Walz now as governor in Minnesota, their record is incredibly clear in supporting all trimester abortion, in wanting to, well, successfully, in Tim Walz's case, removing protections for babies born alive after failed abortions. Kamala Harris and Tim Walz both co-sponsored the Women's Health Protection Act, which would not allow any restrictions on abortion. And the thing that gets me, they always say no one wants abortion in the 7th, 8th, 9th month. You know, they scoff at that idea. If that was true, then they should have no problem agreeing with President Trump that late-term abortion is gruesome and we should at least limit it at that point. Yeah. So they disprove their own point in the fact that they can't even place any kind of limitation on late-term abortion.
Yeah, that's exactly right. And I can't tell you how many times they've been asked that question, and every single time they completely dodge it. It's very evident that they don't want to have any type of position on how much abortion is really too much. They think it's 100% fully permissible and shouldn't be regulated under any circumstance. And To your point about Governor Walz, I mean, this is actual law on the books in Minnesota. I mean, he removed the protection for babies that are survive abortion and really put into place what Ralph Northam in Virginia was quoted saying on that radio show. This goes back probably five or six years ago, but, you know, he was talking about how, yeah, well, after a baby's born, we'll just kind of put them on the table and we'll decide what to do with it. What? I mean, that was just talking on a radio show. That was an actual law. And then, but Governor Walz has basically put that policy in place. One other thing I want to get your thoughts on is just how you're viewing the life issue, because Republican pollsters and strategists, they always try to say, you know, we can't win on the life issue. We're losing on the abortion issue. We have to be, quote unquote, moderate, or that means in favor of abortion to some degree, which I'm not really buying any of this. And this is that's purely a strategy and political discussion. There's another discussion which is more important, and that is the moral discussion, which I think should dominate all things and guide our discussions on all things, even political strategy. But what would you say to people who make that claim that the life issue isn't a winning issue nowadays?
Well, I think you're always going to lose in a battle you refuse to fight. And the life issue is one that, for some, it has become a politically scary issue to navigate. And so, in some cases, people are more inclined to just immediately pivot and not even talk about the life issue and immediately go to the economy and the border. But if candidates are not defining their position in a compassionate and clear way, then that's allowing the other side to do so. Where we are seeing progress on the life issue is where there is clarity, where there is compassion, and where people are not scared to talk about the issue. Marco Rubio, for example, is an incredible example of acknowledging the complicating emotions and various situations involved in the abortion issue, but saying, you know what, I believe life should be protected, and let's do what we can. You know, he's very compassionate. And when we see politicians, whether it's at the state or federal level, take that head on in a compassionate and clear way, they actually win on this issue.
Mm, that's exactly right. And to your point about being on offense, we have to do better at that as conservatives and as Christians, and also not let the left continue to define the discussion really redefine the discussion, because, you know, we could go into all the specifics, and I know your group does all the research and the writing on this, but abortion is not really necessary under any circumstance. And this all these exceptions and exclusions and life of the mother, the left has really morphed this abortion definition into basically all-encompassing, even things that aren't really technically abortions, such as a preterm delivery where the child doesn't make it. They would call that an abortion. I don't really define that as an abortion. I think that's a miscarriage or a preterm delivery where, unfortunately, the life, the baby just isn't viable. So we also have to really redefine these terms and be specific when we're talking about abortion, what exactly is abortion and things like that, because that's what they go to is they say, life of the mother. And then they also go into the exceptions of rape and incest. So we could get through all that, but going on offense to me seems to be the way to go in order to win this debate, which we got a lot of headway to go. We really, our movement got caught somewhat flat-footed with this overturning of Roe versus Wade, but hopefully we'll make up some ground in the coming years. Jamie, thanks so much for coming on. Tell our audience where they can find more about SBA.
Yeah, thanks so much for having me. You can find more about us and our work at sbaprolife.org.
All right, thanks so much. That's Jamie Dangers. She's Director of Federal Affairs over at the Susan B. Anthony Pro-Life America organization, and sbaprolife.org is their website. sbaprolife.org is their website. I think that the life issue is a winning issue. I don't accept this argument that conservatives can't win on the life issue. I just don't think that's true. I just think the God haters and the abortion crowd, I just think they've dominated the debate. And it puts you in a bad position going into a debate that has been dominated by the left. But that's also a really tertiary matter. And what I mean by that is saying we can't win on this issue should not be our determining factor on whether we're going to take a position on this issue. I mean, we just can't do that. Can you imagine throughout human history if every government official running for election or every king or whatever position of authority we're talking about in civics, if they just ran on whatever the popular vote was, whatever was popular amongst the people? I mean, if that was the case, we would have never outlawed slavery in America. If it was all about what is the public think? What's the popular vote? Well, I mean, that's part of the equation, right? I mean, what do we need to do to get elected? What does the electorate look like? But that should not be a dominating theme or a dominating factor in our political discourse. Because you know what that indicates to me is that we don't ever have a core. We don't really have core convictions. It's really about, you know, whatever it takes to get elected. Which is backwards, completely backwards. And when public officials running for election, running for re-election, are candidates that first time, you know, rookies to the game, if you begin shaping your views and your opinions based on what the public sentiment is, that is a very bad place to be. A very, very, very bad place to be. Instead, we need public officials, candidates for public office that have core values that anchor their worldview and their beliefs, and they carry that into the public arena.
This is At the Core on American Family Radio with your host, Walker Wildman.
Welcome back to The Core here on American Family Radio. We're going to take your calls on the following questions. Number one, are you going to vote early? Have you voted early? Or are you going to vote on Election Day? That's what I want to know from our listening audience, just to get a ballpark on how people are voting this election cycle. So are you going to vote on Election Day, or have you already voted early, whether it be by mail or in person early before Election Day? I want to know that. And then secondly, what are you yourself feeling about this election as far as enthusiasm goes, and what are you hearing from other people around you? I would like to know that. What are you hearing from your friends and family, coworkers? Is there enthusiasm, or is there a sense of non-enthusiasm, lack of enthusiasm? I'm interested to know about that. So we're going to take your calls here in the next few minutes. Here's the number to call in, 888-589-8840, 888-589-8840, 888-589-8840. You know you're a loyal AFR listener when you're already calling in before I gave the number out. You got to love it. So we already got some calls coming in the door now. So I want to know how you're going to vote, and the type of sentiment that you're feeling, or others around you, about this election and the momentum, et cetera, heading into Election Day. Under 3 weeks away. Crazy. Comes by so fast. I wanted to mention one story before we do take these calls. Virginia, various Republican governors and secretaries of state have really been doing a blitz in the last few months to clean up the voter rolls in states around the country using existing statute, existing law on the books. And Virginia Attorney General has, both the Virginia Attorney General and the governor have been cleaning up the voter rolls in the state of Virginia in order to remove illegal immigrants from the voting rolls in the state of Virginia. And guess who sued the state of Virginia in response to this? The Biden Department of Justice, or more accurately, the Kamala Harris Department of Justice. They're suing Virginia because they want illegals on the voting rolls. You can't make this stuff up. Let's hear from Glenn Youngkin. This is the governor of Virginia on this matter.
Here I am, a governor, mandated, and oh, by the way, proud to support and defend the Constitution of the United States, the Constitution of the Commonwealth of Virginia, and by law to make sure that we have clean voter rolls. And the Department of Justice shows up 25 days before a presidential election and says, stop doing that. To me, this is unprecedented.
So this is crazy. I mean, the Democrats claim that they don't want illegals voting either. And they say, oh, we already have laws on the books on this. Well, we do to a degree. There are some federal statutes on this. Well, why are you going into Virginia suing on behalf of illegal immigrants? These are folks, these are criminals. Why are they criminals? Because they crossed our border without permission. Every immigrant is illegal and a criminal by definition. All right? You don't have to commit violent crimes to be an illegal immigrant. You simply cross our border without proper documentation. You are thus, by definition, an illegal immigrant. You're a criminal. You violated federal law. And Virginia is removing these folks from the voter rolls 30 days out from the election. They've actually been doing this for several months. But the DOJ comes in and they're basically petitioning the court. We want illegals on the voter rolls. That's the position. Can you imagine having that position in court? And they're not going to say that. They're going to nuance it and claim that, you know, voters are being disenfranchised and all these bogus excuses. But in essence, they're arguing that we want illegals on the voter rolls. This is the position of the Democrat Party. Let's go to the calls, go to the phones, and see what voters think about this. Monty is in, actually, Virginia, the state of Virginia, what we were just talking about there. Monty, what are you thinking? How are you voting?
Well, let me tell you something very quickly so I don't burn up too much of your time. My family's been here nearly 300 years. We were the first pastors to preach on the streets of Culpeper, 1774, locked up for that. But the other thing is, Youngkin and DeSantis from Florida, they would be a great ticket, the next Republican opportunity. They would be two wonderful people on a ticket together. And I voted on September 20th. I was a precinct captain, Republican Party, for 10 years. Couldn't even get somebody to volunteer for a half hour. But to get to the point, Virginia, if we would take Northern Virginia, put it over in California, and bring West Virginia back into Virginia, we would have such happy conservative people. Wouldn't that be great?
I'll give you an amen on that one.
Yeah, we got a former Virginian here from the Richmond area. And yeah, you got a lot of bleed over from the bureaucrats in D.C., don't you?
Well, think about it. Culpeper, Virginia is the most splendid, wonderful small town, has a Federal Reserve. Now it's the Library of Congress. You can come here and have free movies Thursday. Look it up on your phone, mm-hmm. Library of Congress, Culpeper. But anyway, not to take too much more of your time. I've been a Christian since I was five. Don Wildman, when Marvin Sanders came here in 94 before he died of cancer, mm-hmm. we have two of your stations, I think within 20 miles, 91.5, if people would listen.
Yeah, Culpeper, Winchester.
91.3.
Right.
But yeah, yes, sir. But the problem in Culpeper, Virginia, is we're 90 miles from Richmond, which was Ralph Northam. I tried to see him on we had a walk for life. Couldn't even get to see the guy. But to think you could take a baby, put him in a towel, inject him with some fluid, kill it, and yeah. think that you're a doctor of medicine, what a criminal person he was. But get behind the vote, everybody. Vote as early as you can. I voted for Trump twice in 20, meaning that when I voted for him, it showed up Hillary Clinton on the screen. And I said out to one of the poll watchers, I said, this thing is wrong. It's showing up Hillary Clinton. You really have to check how honest a world power country is that is third world in voting. We're communist. Criminal the way we behave, but I'm coming down there to you. Used to live in
Thanks, Monty. Appreciate the call. Getting a little long-winded there, but yeah, double check your vote, make sure it's going to the right person. And I agree, our voting laws and our voting process is very outdated. We're living in 2024. I'm not saying we need to go all computers on everybody, but as far as verification of the person casting the ballot, there's no reason we cannot have more sophisticated security measures in place to ensure that your vote is going and being counted the proper way. Clark is calling from Georgia. Clark in Georgia, what are your thoughts?
Well, we're pretty much going to vote for Trump across the board. And a lot of my friends, they have early voted because there seems like there's a lot of excitement about Trump running right here. And I know that we've been looking forward to this right here now for going on 4 years now. And, you know, I think we just need to get some common sense back in the White House, you know, get people back up there to fear God and love their country. That's my view on it.
Hey, Clark, what part of Georgia are you in?
We're around Airby, Georgia, big town.
Okay. Yeah, right.
It's not a big town. There's not even a red light.
Excellent. Excellent. All right. Appreciate you calling in, Clark. Thanks for the call. Got several stations there in Georgia. All right. Continuing our election discussion, seeing when people are voting and what kind of enthusiasm or lack thereof they're sensing on the ground in their state. We are covering most of these states in the South. Tony's in Arkansas. Hey, Tony, what's on your mind?
Hey, Walker. I just like to first say real quick, appreciate listening to you and Rick Green on the weekday. And but I've always been this person. My mom and dad and I, we always vote together, and we've always voted on election day. But I'm starting to wonder if that's a good thing. And I am concerned about the, you know, these folks trying to cheat their way to the top again. So, you know, we're here concerned in Arkansas about it. And, but, you know, I know we're kind of a red state, and I just wondered, you know, some people don't vote here. I mean, they're, you know, they think it's already wrapped up. My children, they kind of think that, you know, so I don't know what do I say about them, you know, say to them about voting.
Yeah.
Real quick. And then I'll get off the air and listen.
Yeah. Thanks, Tony. I'll let you go and let you listen over the air. You know, any excuse to not vote is a bad excuse. And I know that that sounds elementary, but, you know, there is always going to be certain levels of injustice or irregularities or fraud or errors, just could be very innocent errors when it comes to our votes. Now the degree of that should be very minimal, right? And the percentage of problematic, irregular, fraudulent voting should be very minimal. I agree to that standard. But the reality is when you have 150 to 170 million adults voting in over 50 states or in 50 states, you're going to have some issues here and there. Okay. So, I'm not making excuses for fraudulent voting or cheating or election officials not doing their job right. That's not what I'm doing here. But what I'm saying is we can't say, well, it's all rigged, so I'm not going to vote. No, that's way too basically dumb to say. I mean, that's a way dumbed down version of wanting to just kind of check out of this whole election thing and say that it's all not fair anyway, so I'm just not going to show up. I mean, that's like what my kids say, you know, when they want to make an excuse for not doing what I tell them to. They just throw out some kind of broad blanket statement and say, well, I'm just not going to do it. Well, no, we got to show up. We got to show up and we got to do our part. And if we think there's problems with the election, then let's address that. Okay, let's address that. Let's run for election commissioner. Let's run for state office. Let's run for county office. All right. So there are solutions for virtually every problem when it comes to our election. So let's be problem solvers. Let's be go-getters. And let's not be excuse makers. That's the memo that I have for people sitting on the sidelines. Sandy is in my home state of Mississippi. Sandy, what's on your mind?
Oh, I'm in Memphis, not Mississippi. Sorry.
Oh, great. Well, close. Memphis. Sandy from Tennessee.
Well, I'm actually on my way to early vote because I'm a poll worker and I have to early vote. And I'm pretty excited because the place is jam-packed. So people are getting out to vote. We had a county election here 2 months ago, and in a section of 4,500 people, less than 100 voted. So wow. I'm really excited to see it picked up.
Yeah, for sure.
People are wanting to get out and vote. I don't know who you were talking to just a moment ago when he said the reason that people can't vote when they're not here legally is because they're illegal. And I just go, why have we been pushed into saying alien immigrants, or even calling them immigrants? They're not immigrants. They're right. illegal aliens.
Yeah, they're
I get so frustrated that our news media keeps watering it down.
Yeah, no, I completely agree. I completely agree. That's why I don't use the word migrants or even just immigrants. It always has to be illegal immigrants. But technically, according to federal statute, and you're right, they're technically aliens. According to federal statute, they're foreign aliens. The military term would be invaders. but we've watered it down and made it less impactful, if you will, when it comes to the terminology. Thanks so much for the call. David's in Arkansas. Let's try this again. Hey, David, what's on your mind?
Good afternoon, sir. How you doing today?
Hey, doing well. What you thinking?
Let's see. I usually vote on the day of the election, but people could be sick. They're saying that we could be under terrorist watches or whatever type deal with all the illegal immigrants, invaders or whatever. And we don't know what the election day is going to hold, if there'll be riots, if there'll be armed people dissuading Republican voters, letting in Democrat voters. But, you know, if you're Republican, go away. But we don't know. I mean, it could be a wild thing for sure. But so I'm going to vote early.
Yeah,
because I could be sick. And I don't want to miss this election. It's so important. And for anyone that thinks that's out there and thinks we shouldn't vote, we have a cheap freedom. This generation hadn't had to fight for the freedoms that we enjoy. So many great parents and grandparents and great grandparents have fought and died and bled on many a foreign field, so that we have the right or the privilege to either vote or not vote. But voting is if you're a Christian, you should get out and vote. That is your civic responsibility.
Yeah.
And for someone that says, I don't know, or they're too controversial or whatever, find out the issues. Vote Romans chapter 1, verses about 23 to the end of the chapter, and that'll tell you which side you need to go to.
Absolutely. Thanks so much, David. Appreciate the call. Vote, vote, vote. Understand the issues. And folks, if you're looking for a saint on the ballot, good luck. Now, we should desire, as Christians, righteous leadership. Absolutely, 1,000%. But that's not always the case when it comes to final selections in November. So we ought to be engaged in the primary so that we can get righteous leaders on the ballot. But nonetheless, at this point, it's a decision at the federal level of which person we think is going to lead this country the best. And down ballot, you know, there's some very good people running for public office. So we have to show up. We have to be engaged. Vote, vote, vote.
Preborn celebrates that Roe versus Wade has been overturned. Roe has been responsible for the slaughter of over 63 million babies. Now the decision to abort a child will be left in the hands of the states, and sadly, abortions will continue in the most liberal states. Over the past 16 years, Preborn has positioned their clinics in the top abortion cities where 50% of abortions occur. Preborn's work of saving babies' lives continues at an even greater level as they save babies' lives and defend their centers from the radical hate groups who want to shut them down. Preborn's response is dependent on you, the pro-life community. Be a part of rescuing lives and changing hearts for Christ. $28 sponsors one ultrasound, and $140 will help to rescue five babies' lives. Dial #250 and say the keyword baby, or go to preborn.com. All gifts are tax deductible.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast may not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.